CDC talk. I just wanted to say one thing about the earlier discussion about mental health training and so forth, and the whole aspect of mental health following disasters. On an individual level, I've worked very closely in Houston with a community-based organization that has been serving over 1,200 clients. And one of the things that they've constantly said to me is that the main thing that they've been doing and what they feel that has not been done by other Red Cross and others is attending to the mental health and substance abuse needs of the clients that they serve. So when you talk about the training, I think it's going to be important that that training be made available to those underground groups, those non-traditional groups, because this is a very non-traditional group that happened to be very successful getting funding for case management. And they've had to basically, through volunteering, through begging and borrowing and calling on friends, to find ways to help clients. And you're talking about people who are providing mental health services with no training and no background. And that's not good. So I just wanted to put that on the table for SAMHSA to think about. But my talk will focus, as Linda has indicated, on research collaboration overall, and then I will also talk a little bit about some of the priorities, suggested topic, research topic areas, and in some instances priorities that have been identified through a number of activities that we've been working on at CDC. I would say add that clearly from yesterday, I hope that you all had a chance to hear our director, Dr. Julie Gerberding, talk about health equity and health systems transformation. You know, I work at CDC, but really, as an individual, I thought it was really very timely and outstanding, the remarks she made, and I think it fits in well with what we're talking about in terms of vulnerable populations. Before I go too much further, though, I want to acknowledge those on the slide who weren't able to be here with us today to hear and talk with you about this important area. So I'm not going to spend much of my time because I know my time is limited, and I took a minute up to talk about his talk. So I'm going to skip over this slide, and you'll see as I go through what I'll be talking about here. Of course, we all know that health disparities is an issue that we've been dealing with for several decades, and we've had limited progress in addressing disparities and making a difference. But they can be observed across many populations and subpopulations and conditions, and there are many individuals who experience this, and they may experience it by race, ethnicity, age, gender, and so forth. But when you bring in the issue of emergencies or disasters, then those who suffer from disparities may have greater exacerbation of certain conditions, pre-existing conditions, or new conditions because they are a disparate population. I think this is illustrated by anthrax following 9/11, as well as SARS, and then Hurricane Katrina, how certain real or perceived injustices could have and may have impeded acceptance and effectiveness of response efforts. Take, for example, those who were evacuated to Houston. I know that there were many who did not even enter the dome because they felt their rights would be violated, that, you know, something might happen to them, they get separated from family and so forth. And so they didn't even go into the dome. They went and stayed with others within the Houston area. Now, when we talk about vulnerable populations, we don't limit this conversation just to racial and ethnic minority populations. There are many other groups that are vulnerable during this time. You have pregnant women, people with disabilities, persons with chronic diseases. This is an area that we are particularly working on within CDC with the Office of Minority Health and Health Disparities, and our Chronic Disease Center is looking at chronic diseases and how this is impacting people during disasters. And you have many other conditions as listed on this slide. So just want to highlight some of the social and environmental determinants that impact vulnerable populations doing a disaster. And I think I can't do it better than to illustrate this through Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, who's an author and professor, and he is a part of a recovery documentary on Houston recovery activities that will probably be out later this year or early spring. And he basically, you know, starts out by saying, long before the storm hit, before the waters rose and the winds descended, these were vulnerable populations. Many young people, elderly, very poor people who lived together, didn't have access to health care or had very poor health care access. And educational infrastructure was eroded significantly. So he says, when you put all this together, the poor, the black, and the vulnerable were already poor, black, and vulnerable long before Katrina hit. And many are still persistently poor, structurally unequal people, and living in conditions of squalor. So I think this well illustrates what we really need to be looking at, what we need to do more research around to better understand as we go forward. So I want to start in terms of talking about three activities that are going on to begin to look at research that's needed for disparate populations, vulnerable populations, and in terms of emergencies and disasters. Of course, many of you, I'm sure, know about the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act, or affectionately called PAPA. It was enacted in December 2006, and it requires the Secretary to lead all federal public health and medical responses for emergencies covered under the National Response Plan. And they have several sections within this act, and those that are relevant to this talk is the 2814, which requires taking account of the public health and medical needs of at-risk individuals when there's a public health emergency. And more important to this talk is that another section, 304, authorizes the Secretary to establish a research agenda for public health preparedness and response. And this research agenda will help set priorities for research, and including a focus on those that will directly impact on populations, vulnerable populations during a disaster. So stay tuned for more on that through HHS as well as CDC in terms of how that research agenda will unfold. I would like to now tell you about the research guide that we call it, for short, research guide, but its full title is Advancing the Nation's Health, a Guide to Public Health Research Needs for the Next 10 Years. And this is a tool that we developed over a two-year period. We engaged many of our partners inside and outside of CDC to help us to identify the research that we felt as a group was needed to improve and protect the nation's health for the next 10 years. There are about 121 different research themes in this document. There are 9 chapters, and within those research themes, there are scopes of research. And of course, there is a section on, a full chapter on preparedness. Now, we see this a tool as being something that we can use to foster collaboration with others around a number of topics, and I'll specifically talk about one area that we are working on now. Now, within this research guide, in every chapter and for every research theme, we required those that worked with us to develop it to evaluate each theme for its relevance to health disparities. So if one of our partners proposed a theme for the guide, we asked them in writing to tell us, how will this impact health disparities? In addition to asking for everything to be evaluated for health disparities, we also created a separate section within the research guide that deals directly with health disparities, and that would be in Chapter 9, the cross-cutting research chapter. And the sections that are mainly related to that would be burden of disease, social determinants of health, and health disparities, and prevention and elimination research themes. And within those sections, we focus more on translation and community-based research along with surveillance and measures, but we think the translation and the community-based participatory research is the most important research that we can focus on. Now, even within the other chapters, some chapters, and you'll see from with the preparedness chapter, really went further and dealt specifically with health disparities within their own chapters. So this shows you some of the topics within the preparedness chapter that focus on vulnerable populations. And as you can see here, for example, the second one where it says describe and explain how diverse communities detect, interpret, respond to, and communicate perceived and actual public health threats. Again, going back to Katrina, one thing that someone recently pointed out is that people sometimes criticize those who did not evacuate and say, you know, they should have evacuated. Did we take into consideration that Katrina hit on what, August 27th? Many of those people are on monthly stipends that they received on September 1st. So they had not, on August 1st, expected Katrina, and so did not set money aside to be able to evacuate from Katrina. So that feeds into that particular example there, that we need to better understand what's going on and better help people so that we can better help people to interpret and respond to threats. Okay, and this is just another set of topics that's in the research guide. And by the way, the research guide is available at the CDC booth on CD-ROM. And I'm going to just, you know, move past this. I did make this available electronically if you want it further, but you can go get the guide and have it right in the CD-ROM. But these are just other examples, and one thing to highlight here is the whole notion of still there is that residual effect of Tuskegee study out there. And so we have to consider how that might be influencing individual and population and community, you know, factors. This is okay. And this set of topics here is just at a slightly lower level within the research guide. These are from the scopes of research. They're individual research examples, so they're a little bit more granular. And you'll get to see how that bears out when you look at the guide. So I want to move on to talk now about something that is near and dear to us at CDC and also at HHS, Office of Minority Health, where this initiative is now housed. But I just want to say that given that the research guide is a platform for collaboration, once we finished developing the research guide, and by the way, we did put that out on the Federal Register, and we received 7,000 comments back on the research guide when we were developing it, and it resulted in adding new themes that we had not actually thought about and that we don't really do at CDC very well. That's just to say that this was a very public and partner engagement activity to develop the guide. And building on that, we felt that now that we have the guide, what do we do? How do we get the word out there? How do we work with our partners? And we felt that the best way for us to start doing that was to identify an area within the guide in which we needed to make greater progress. And we identified health disparities as that area that we should focus on. And so in doing that, we put out a call for collaboration. We said to our federal partners, starting with HHS, Office of Public Health Science, and the National Institutes of Health and other agencies, can we come together to think of new or improved solutions to eliminate health disparities through research, practice, and policy? Can we come together to work on interdisciplinary approaches and partners across the federal government to identify what we need to do to move the needle on health disparities? We also recognize that Congress had mandated agencies to address disparities and collaboration, and we realized that we could work well with the HHS Office of Minority Health to do this. And so we reached out to them, and of course they responded very well because this fit in well with what they were doing. So we found that the FCHDR, as we call it, became an outgrowth of the broader health HHS efforts to coordinate research and data and CDC's efforts to promote research using the Advancing the Nation's Health. And actually, we used that to then go out to our partners and recruit more partners from various agencies to help us carry this out. And Dr. Rochelle Rollins is sitting in the office, in the audience here, and she's now one of the key people at HHS helping us continue this effort. But I want to clarify that this was to identify the common interest among agencies, not to make any one agency give up what was important to them and stop doing that to do what we were working on, but to where was there a common interest where we could work together across agencies. And I also want to just clarify that the research topics from the federal collaborative are those that could best address multi-agency collaboration, but they are not. We are not calling them part of a research agenda. I just want to clarify that. These are all the agencies that have participated. We think that this is our first opportunity to work across on social determinants of health. As you can see, we have HUD at the table, we have EPA at the table, we have education at the table, and we have Department of Justice at the table with us in this initiative. It's through those efforts that we can begin to work across agencies on the critical social and environmental determinants of health that are really driving health disparities. As you've heard over and over again, we can't eliminate disparities by only focusing on individual behavior. And so here's some of the accomplishments. You know, as I've mentioned, we've had over 100 scientists involved since May 2006. At that first meeting, we identified 165 topics that we felt were important to address through collaboration. We prioritized those topics and identified the top 23, and then we selected 4 of the topics to focus on. Mind you, preparedness were not among those 4. And so here are the 4, and not surprisingly, mental health is one of the 4. Culturally appropriate mental health care is one of the 4 topics we're working on. Built environment is another one, comorbidities and multiple chronic conditions, and obesity. And now that we've, you know, gotten as far as we have the co-leads, as I said, HHS. We also have a co-lead in the Department of Education. We thought it was important to have 2 different departments leading this effort. We've formalized the steering committee and the structure, and we've adopted a conditional charter to guide us in our work. HHS has identified resources, so this is not a completely volunteer activity, and participants have been asked to get their leaders at their agencies to say that they are a part of this so that it's part of their jobs and not volunteer work. And so just to show you that we worked in a number of areas, and preparedness was one of them, and these are some of the themes that group of over 60 people in that first meeting came up with, and you see that they link well with what we really need to be doing in terms of preparedness. And so I'll just skip over those wonderful pictures. They're just pictures about that show you the folks that are involved in the collaborative, but the point was to point out to you that we consider the missions and the values and the priorities of each agency and we use that to help us work together. We knew that it would be difficult, and we tried to work through those issues that get in the way sometimes when you want to collaborate with others. You know, the concern that will you take over some things that I've been the lead on in the past. And so I'm going to skip over some of these. Again, this is available to you online, and just say that we're taking this very seriously. And so when we met on September 17th, we said we need outcomes for the first year. We don't want to be squalling around for the next 2 years talking about what are we going to do. So we said, let's develop a first year and a 90-day action plan, and then also create a 3 to 5 year higher level plan for how we will work together. We intend to come together, bring agencies together to do funding opportunity announcements, what you probably previously call RFAs or program announcements. We're going to be drafting publications for critical health disparities research areas, and we hope to conduct a meta-analysis of health disparities and continue to engage non-federal partners, because we did also have our first non-federal partner meeting, and they pretty much echoed the concern that we need to be focusing on social determinants of health and community-based participatory research. And I'll just skip over that slide because it's not important. And as I said, this was transferred to HHS Office of Minority Health at the end of our September 17th meeting. And Suzanne Herden-Roberts is now the lead, and Dr. Robert Mays in the National Institute of Health is going to be a co-lead along with Suzanne. I always say her name wrong. I'm sorry. Tell her I'm sorry. I will be a member of the steering committee and just continue to work behind the scenes on an ad hoc work group with Suzanne and Bob Mays to continue to build this federal collaborative.